Well, what was interesting was when the House passed the bill, and it was by a vote of 81-49, so it was pretty controversial, obviously. And then it came over to the Senate, and where some changes were made, obviously. And it came out of the Senate. It was 30-1. I mean, right. That was, had a bipartisan support, had buy-in from just about everybody.
And support may be a little strong. You know, I'm one of the 30. I voted for the bill. It's not what I would have drafted. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important, and many legislators believe, that the process itself warrants some appreciation. My vote, and I think some other people voted for the bill, to recognize that it was addressing a legitimate thing, may not be happy with the bill, but if you don't support a process through which bills become better, people have very little incentive to make bills better. So the support was more that the process is working than it was a resounding statement that, yeah, this is exactly what we would like. Either way, the bill passed.
Yeah, the bill passed.
And it's better than when it started.
That's true. That's true. So let's move on to a bill that you're near and dear to your heart, because it was one of yours in healthcare liability, and it's Senate Bill 232. So I'll let you kind of tell us exactly what it did.
Throughout our presentation today, there are bills where the involvement of lawyers and judges outside the Capitol was essential. And this is one, actually. Senate Bill 232 was prompted by a judicial opinion. I believe it was Justice Corey Carlisle, who noted the problems that we have with kind of a game of gotcha and some uncertainty on both the defense and the plaintiff's side regarding whether or not a particular claim is a healthcare liability claim, which would require a medical expert report. It ends up tying up the litigation for time. It ends up both sides kind of taking bets on what the outcome's going to be, some unjust results, some unnecessary appeals and reversals. It simply was not serving the interests of anybody, but it was literally a judicial opinion that my wife had read and said, you know, hey, Nathan, don't you think this ought to be a piece of legislation? And, you know, she happened to know a legislator. It had very little opposition. It takes a bit of explaining for these things. But once you explain something non-controversial, it actually has a good chance of passing. This one moved along, and I've spoken to a number of lawyers involved in this area of the law, and they are very pleased, and they think it will make a significant difference in the conservation of judicial resources and in more just outcomes in the courts.
Yeah, and it wasn't just only Justice Carlisle's opinion. I know that was probably the trigger for you, but I mean, our appellate courts were dealing with this issue for quite a while. And of course, important note to appellate practitioners that this preliminary determination with the judge makes a decision, it's going to be subject to interlocutory appeal on both sides. So there's more work to be done for appellate lawyers too.
Absolutely.
Sort of a bill.
Don't want to hurt business.
There you go. Now, let's talk about COVID-19, obviously a hot topic, and the primary bill coming out of that situation was SB6. I think it's the primary bill. That may be just kind of overstatement.
Is.
But deals with responses to a pandemic disaster. It provides some liability protections for physicians and healthcare providers who were providing care during the pandemic, for volunteers that were providing healthcare services, you know, emergency related products, you know, PPE, things along those lines that were rushed into production and put out into the field for use. And there's some other, you know, liability protections dealing with those who are exposed to the coronavirus because of whatever, you know, services they were being provided. And there are some limitations of liability that were provided for, you know, for business owners and those who were open. And so, if they were reckless or if there was some intentional conduct or they disregarded what the guidelines were, or what the CDC said, things on those lines, I mean, they've got some liability there, but there's some protections that were put in place for those folks who were doing that. And of course, there's an expert report requirement. If you're going to file suit dealing with this, that will also be subject to an interlocutory appeal. So there's a lot in SB6. Senator, if you want to talk about it.
It's worth looking at. Despite grave disappointments with the legislative session, I think SB6 is a model of the process at work, quite honestly. Jerry's numbers earlier about the partisan breakdown of the legislature is relevant because things that are hyper-partisan get rammed through. And this could well have been one of them. It's easy enough to pass something 18-13 out of the Senate and whatever numbers they want to get in the House. And there was a lot of partisan motivation to have a very draconian blanket immunity to anything related to COVID. And of course, the response on the other side is no, the common law is fine. And rather than ram it through in purely partisan form, The bill's author and the committee and others of us that were involved in it actually solicited input from across the board without regard to ideology, took a lot of heat from both sides as compromises were made. But right up until the very last minute on the floor, when there was one remaining very, very important amendment to people, to really securing the votes. And again, it could have been rammed through 1813, but I was involved in the negotiations of that final amendment. And the thought was, this is important to our state. And to just knock something through on partisan grounds is not going to provide the public or businesses the reassurance that our legislature functions or that we've taken care of people and businesses the way we needed to. It would be much better if we all agreed on this. And so final amendments were made, bringing over a bunch of people. And so I think it came out of the Senate 30-1.
Yeah, 29-1, I think, was the original vote. But then it went over to the House and then it came back and the approval of the House amendments, it ended up being 30-1.
Right. So it was really one of the better moments in the legislature in terms of good lawmaking that accommodated everyone's input and interests.
Okay. And a detailed summary of what this bill did is on page 9 of your materials, if y'all wanted to take a look at that, to really drill down and figure out exactly what that bill did and what it didn't do. Let's talk about the judiciary. Quickly, and really, there were several, and we'll talk about a couple of these bills that would affect the judiciary here in a second that didn't pass, but one that did is SJR 47. That's a resolution, actually, so it's going to be a constitutional amendment that changes the eligibility requirement for some of our judiciary. The main thing that this bill did was increase the experience requirements for district judges from 4 years to 8 years. That's primarily, I think, what the bill was designed to do. And that would apply to terms beginning January 1 of 2025. But there are some other little...